Hello, welcome. This is a podcast by Undercurrent News. We are talking today to Matthew Craze of Spheric Research, who is author of The Aquaculture Frontiers, a series of reports on the global aquaculture industry. We have just he has just published Aquaculture Frontiers 4, which is focused on farmed white fish, namely tilapia and pangasius. So we're going to talk to Matt about this. Welcome, Matt. Yeah, so Matt, maybe you could just tell us a little bit about this report. What's new about this report, and sort of what is the main message about the white fish industry?
Sure. So we've spent the last 3 or 4 months speaking to industry actors and providing people in this industry with a global snapshot of the farm white fish industry. There's been a lot going on this year, from the China-US trade war to new ventures in Africa, to new ventures in Brazil, to a radically changing marketplace. And it was a great time to do this kind of report.
Great. Well, you touched on the trade war there with China. That's obviously an interesting issue. So I understand that Trump has slapped a 25% tariff on tilapia imports, and I understand that most of the tilapia comes from China, right?
Right. So the tilapia industry has been developing in the US for the last 2 decades, built on a very cheap source of tilapia from China, coming from the southern provinces of mainly Hainan and Guangdong. It's been an extremely profitable industry and a success story. And this year, the tariffs came into effect this year. In actual fact, they started last year with 10%, and that now they've gone up to 25% and could reach 30%. So this is a game-changing moment for the industry because it means that cost advantage that China has held for many years versus other producers has all but vanished, and you could get new actors coming into the industry. So we've sort of gone some way to answering the question of who that could be.
As I understand it, that the consumption in the US of tilapia has been on the decline for several years now. It hasn't just been because of this trade tariffs. Why do you think that is?
Right. So there's been a longer term trend of decline. So since about 2015, if you look at consumer reports, tilapia consumption in the US has been steadily declining. It was a fish that is very widely available in products from fish tacos to you go to a buffet on a cruise liner, and you'll find this fish everywhere. It's very ubiquitous. And it's very favored among large retailers and big restaurant chains because there has been such a steady flow of supply from China. So it's very predictable, and the pricing is very predictable. There's very little volatility in the prices. But the consumers have been tuning out because of scare stories about farming practices in China. There's been all this sort of stuff that the fish eat poop and things that are not necessarily true. In the past there's been bad farming practices, but also some misunderstanding as well about farming practices. The U.S. demand has been pretty slow, and now with the tariffs, things are going to change again.
So do you think that the consumption of whitefish will continue to decline then in the U.S., or do you think that perhaps there will be other countries, alternative actors will come in to kind of fill that gap? If the demand is still there for the fish, then there will be other actors?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the import statistics, the imports of tilapia white fish is much greater than any type of other white fish, including Alaskan pollock, cod. It's a juggernaut, and you can't just replace it like that. Immediately, what will happen is the consumers will start to probably notice price increases because you can't just put 30% tariff onto this huge, giant source of supply and expect the market to stay stagnant. In actual fact, prices have been dropping, but the market sees a reversal as inventory that was purchased before the tariffs came into effect is depleted, and then you get supply coming in with the new tariffs. What we know that is going on is that the major retailers, from Walmart to big distribution companies are starting to make inquiries in other countries that could become potential future suppliers and replace this supply that was coming from China.
So what other countries are we talking about?
Well, I think Vietnam was a country that was has a long-standing aquaculture history, heritage, if you like, and produces a lot of pangasius. But at the same time, some of the producers in Vietnam that have been approached are quite hesitant to get into this market with low prices and a poor demand perspective and the lack of any kind of coordinated marketing effort. You could see a completely new country take that supply. Myanmar, Cambodia, even India. India is a country that is has a growing tilapia industry in the west of India, and they know how to export shrimp because they've built a very large position in exporting Indian shrimp to the US market. So that's a potential one. And then the last one I'd mention is Brazil, where there is a very different kind of industry. It's an industry that's being built right now by poultry giants, very well-financed companies that are building very large supply chains, efficient supply chains, and with the help of modern processing technology and robotics could actually compete on a cost basis in the US market.
Sort of switching gears a little bit, so I understand that, beyond just the export market, there's also this kind of emerging trend of developing tilapia and pangasius for the local markets. So I think I've heard of Africa, some of the African countries are starting to do that. And this could be, obviously there's a kind of a protein shortage, or we could be facing a protein shortage, and this is potentially a cheap source of protein that could be created.
Yeah, absolutely. That's right. If you take the American market, it would be easy to think that this market's in decline. If you look at the tilapia market, you could say the tilapia market's in decline. It's not at all. It's actually exploding in many parts of the world, but not in the same way. The export market is fairly limited. What we're seeing is what Rabobank analyst Gorjan Nikolic describes as a local-to-local boom of countries that are producing fish for their local markets. Tilapia is quite easy to fish, and it grows to harvest weight in a matter of months. And we've seen countries such as Egypt that have built a tilapia industry from almost nothing in the late 1990s and have gone right through the spring revolution to becoming the world's second largest producer of the fish. But almost all of that fish is consumed in Egypt. And one of the very unique things about the tilapia market from an aquaculture perspective is that it's a very affordable protein. So in Egypt, it's eaten by everybody, from the man on the street to an executive of a company. So that's a very unique thing. And a lot of countries are studying the Egyptian model to build a similar industry.
So they could potentially even export their technology that they're, this sort of this low-cost model that they're doing, that could be taken to Bangladesh, India, different countries.
Absolutely. There's a lot of companies that are looking at the Egyptian model. A lot of companies that are interested in the genetics. You see a big Dutch company in feed, Nutreco, and specifically in fish, their subsidiary, Skretting, that has become heavily embedded with this kind of Egyptian movement and is looking to transplant what it's done in Egypt into a country like Nigeria, which imports billions of dollars of fish every year. That's a country that could become the next hotspot.
What about sort of the technology in sort of aquaculture? I understand that there's like new, there's obviously robotics. I don't know if there's other areas of technology emerging. I mean, could make the whole production line more efficient, cheaper.
Absolutely. So there's two areas of technology which I would highlight. One is on the processing side. So if we take the secondary or value-added processing lines, we could see that, for example, Brazil, these big poultry companies that are coming into the tilapia industry are able to put in very modern processing lines by, for example, built by companies like Marel, and freezing lines, and they're going to start bringing in freezing capacity next year, where they could just compete directly in that US frozen market. Brazil's been exporting fresh tilapia fillets to the US, air freighted fillets, but that's a very different market. they could actually really now compete on that huge frozen market, which we've seen in the past. So that's one area of technology I would highlight. The other area of technology I would definitely highlight is genetics. And as part of this report, we traveled to Brazil and we met with the executives of EW Group, which is a very large genetics company in poultry, and also own Aquagen in salmon. These guys decided that they were going to get in early into Brazil and invest in a hatchery company, Aquabel, which they bought in 2016, that has a national kind of distribution network of hatcheries. And they are getting closely embedded with these big poultry companies to build a new industry. That's a really interesting new segment of the tilapia market.
Okay. So we're going to be getting cheap tilapia and our fish and chips in the future.
Well, I think this new movement might go some way to address the poor perception of tilapia, potentially. Ironically, if you go to a Latin American country, certain Latin American countries where tilapia is produced locally and consumers' perception of tilapia is from local produce, you don't have any of this negativity. So you go into a top-end restaurant in Quito or in Bogota in Colombia, you'll find tilapia on the menu because there hasn't been supply in the past that's come from China or from substandard farming techniques as well. I would also highlight it would be unfair to say that Chinese tilapia is badly farmed. A lot of it is not. It's actually ASC certified, and there's a huge effort going on right now to make sure that this tilapia is farmed in the right way in China. But obviously, in the past, there have been mistakes made.
Yeah, because the US is a very demanding market in terms of hygiene and all the different processes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very demanding market, and people obviously can choose what type of fish they eat. There's lots of options in the US market, and there's a huge movement in certification as well. So people expect to find out where their tilapia has been produced. Now, there are companies that have been at the vanguard of this. If you look at Regal Springs, which is actually the world's largest tilapia company, these guys have for several years been very transparent about where their tilapia comes from. You can even click on a barcode on, for example, a HelloFresh meal kit with Regal Springs tilapia, and the barcode will take you right to a tour of the farm in Indonesia. So there are companies that have been well ahead of the game in that process.
Okay, well, just start to wrap it up then. So, Matt, so I understand you've done quite a few reports. You've done on RAS, you've written about salmon, shrimp, now tilapia. What's the next one?
Sure. So each of these reports, there's going to be six in total. Right now, we've just published the fourth one, which is on whitefish. And what they share in common is that we build these reports from primary research. These reports are not done by Google searches. We add from the reporting capacity of Undercurrent News, and Undercurrent News has a team of reporters who will travel to all of the trade conferences in the world. And then myself personally, I will also speak to industry actors, and I spoke to dozens of actors for this report. And I also attend many of the trade conferences around the world. So these reports are quite unique in the sense that they're built from primary research, and which I think is obviously, there's a lot of products out there that will build industry reports from just Google searches.
So Matt, with this fourth report, you've now covered RAS, salmon, shrimp, and now tilapia and pangasius with whitefish. Maybe you could tell us about the next report.
Sure. So we so far, what these reports share in common is that we go into the specific sectors of aquaculture and we build a snapshot of each species. And the very first report was actually just about indoor farming or RASP, as it's such a big movement within aquaculture. And the next one's going to be on finance. So very much in the same fashion as we've done these other reports, built on primary research. We're going to look at major lenders to the aquaculture industry, and then the entire movement of venture capital, impact investors, incubators, accelerators, and other types of government initiatives to help aquaculture get off the ground. So we'll be looking at this particular segment of aquaculture from various perspectives. You'll get unique insights to global equity, aquaculture equity performance, bond performance, and it should be a good read, because we're building some new ideas about or just new ways of looking at the industry. And I think once again, I can't highlight enough that we make these reports by speaking to industry leaders and all of the major banks, for example, that lend to the sector, right down to impact investors. And so we bring very much primary research or reports crafted from primary research, which is in combination with Undercurrent News and their excellent team of reporters who place a strong emphasis on getting original material from trade shows and conferences around the world and site visits to farms.
So a booming industry then?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it is. It's an industry that's booming, and it's an industry where there's a lot of generational change, because let's not forget, this is an industry that it's really just come about largely in the 1970s and 1980s. Many of those business owners are at retirement age, and so there's this quite large transfer of ownership in these companies to potentially investors that don't have a background in aquaculture. So there's so much going on that we want to write about this.
Well, look forward to that. So that's all we have time for now. So if you want to find out any more about Matt's reports, Spheric Research, you can visit Undercurrent News at www.undercurrentnews.com, or send an email to reports@undercurrentnews.com. Until next time, thanks. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks very much.